Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 258. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and my special guest this week coming out of New York is Joe Daldel. Joe, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Kevin? Thanks for having me.
Thanks to have, you know, it's great to have you on. And, you know, we're going to get into a ton of stuff today, but, you know, again, one of the first things that I want to talk to you about is kind of how you got to where you are today, because I know you're a founder and co-owner of Peak Performance. And I mean, one of the big things that we always get from trainers out there and listeners is, you know, getting to that process of opening up your own place. So can you talk a little bit about your journey to how you got to where you are now?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I actually bought out my partner in this past fall. So it's completely mine. Which,
oh, very cool.
Yeah, pretty happy about that. I didn't take a really like a traditional route in the fitness industry. I kind of got into it sort of in a roundabout way. I was modeling and sort of fell into the fitness industry. And so I didn't go to school for it. I just kind of went the certification route and spent – once I got into that, I really kind of fell in love with it. And then just started immersing myself in all these seminars and workshops and internships, and just started, you know, seeking out really knowledgeable people and just trying to spend as much time with them as possible and to learn. So I didn't go the traditional route of like maybe having, you know, a BA and an exercise, you know, science related field, and then had a feeling or a direction. This is the big business I wanted to go into. I found out that I wanted to go into this sort of later on, probably about the age of 27, 28, and then just been full throttle ever since.
You know, in the terms of the process of opening up your own facility, were there any real like major hurdles or even like lessons that you kind of learned in that process?
Yeah, I mean, you know, God, the thing about running a business and opening a business, it takes so much work. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, I want to open my own gym. And it's funny. It's like, they think it's just like, you know, going to the store and buying an ice cream. It's just not that easy. You know, you need to really kind of have a well thought out plan. And just because you're a successful personal trainer doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a successful business owner. So there's a lot more to it than just, you know, having the training side down. You really kind of have to also, you know, want to own a business and to sort of take on, you know, the responsibilities of what that means. You know, it means that you're basically going to spend a lot of time not just training people, but doing the things that, you know, that takes to run a business, and maybe not the things that you really enjoy doing as well. So in the beginning, when I first started, I had to wear a lot of different hats, you know, doing things that I didn't foresee myself as probably wanting to do, but, you know, cleaning the gym and doing maintenance on equipment and doing, you know, accounting and bookkeeping and all that stuff. And that wasn't like the stuff that I thought I want or the stuff that I wanted to do, but it was the stuff I had to do, at least in the very beginning. And then eventually, you know, I got to the point where I realized that I needed to bring in other people and build a team, because I just couldn't keep doing everything by myself. And, you know, building a team is so critical to building out a successful business and a brand. You know, you need to have people in those positions that you trust and that you feel comfortable enough to delegate different, you know, responsibilities and roles so that you're not constantly having to, second guess what they're doing and or doing the work twice. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. For the rest of the listeners out there, you know, our demographic is, you know, roughly about 70% weekend warrior types, people that are just really into fitness, and we definitely have a good portion that are fitness professionals themselves. But I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what you do with your clients. So can you talk a little bit about the process that you go through when you start working with a new client?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, basically, usually I get requested through email, and then it goes through my director of training or my GM. And then pretty much we'll respond. I'll respond to it if they're interested in training with me, and I'll send them an email back, rates and initial health history questionnaire and some other information that I want, like and the liability waiver and things like that. And then we'll set up like an in-person interview. At that interview, before they even come in the interview, I take a look through the forms that they sent me back just to see if there's any red flags. So things that I might want to ask them at the interview based on those questionnaires. And then we'll kind of go through the interview, and I'll ask them things like, you know, try to find out what their current mindset is, you know, what motivated them to seek me out, kind of like what's their long-term goals and short-term goals. If they have been training, what kind of training have they been doing? If they haven't, you know, then that, you know, I realize that they're a total beginner, and that's a whole different situation. And then also to get a feeling, you know, what their approach is to nutrition. So, and for me in particular, I get a lot of clients that come in because they got to get ready for a certain deadline. So that might be like for a movie role or a photo shoot or even for a fight or a preseason or something like that. So, I got to figure out whether we're on a deadline and what that deadline is and how many weeks we have and things like that. So, you know, with those clients, it can be a little bit different than with your normal client that's just coming in and there's sort of no actual deadline. So, after that, you know, we decide that, you know, we want to work together. You know, we kind of make a decision together because, you know, I may not be right for everybody, and every client might not be right for me. And if I don't feel the client's right for me, whether that's from a financial standpoint or from a personality standpoint, you know, then I'll recommend one of my trainers. But if it's a good fit and they want to work with me and I want to work with them, then I'll get them set up. We'll get an appointment set up for an FMS, a body comp. We'll do an IMET test, which is like a submax treadmill test. So we can do that with anybody too, even a beginner, because we can do it as a walk test. But that at least gives me some baseline data. And then from there, I'll design a training program. And our first session will basically be me teaching them how to foam roll, how to do the dynamic warm-up, the movement prep stuff. And then we'll get a little bit into that first training session. But I like to use that first session really just to get a sense of how they move and to teach them the foam rolling and the warm-up so that they can do that prior to all of our sessions, so we can get right into the workout and spend more time on the training.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because, you know, obviously you mentioned that you train celebrities, and in terms of kind of like the mindset or the way that you have to approach a celebrity, someone that is getting ready for a role or, like you said, a deadline. Are there any kind of major differences of how you approach, you know, how you're going to train that person versus, you know, just someone that's coming off the street and just wants to get that goal of like looking good and just wants like a fat loss program or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, God, there's definitely a difference. It's kind of, to me, training the celebrity to get them ready for a movie like in 10 weeks, 12 weeks is almost like, you know, the same mindset of training a fighter getting ready for a fight. You know, there are things that you'd love to do, like, you know, correct all these different movement imbalances and things like that. But in the end, you only have a certain amount of time, right? You know, and they have to, for the movie star, they have to look good for that part. So, although, you know, correcting movement balances is, you know, is definitely in the back of my mind, getting them lean, putting on size is definitely the primary goal, right? So big thing is, you know, it's making sure that they're going to give me the right amount of commitment to the training. It's getting them immediately hooked up with Dr. Mike Roussel, and he gets their nutrition straightened out, gets them on their supplements, protocols. And then, you know, we may have like maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, the most, to sort of have like a little break-in period. And then we go, You know, we start pushing the pace fast. We just don't have the luxury of you know, taking my time, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. So that, you know, kind of brings me to my next question. So when it comes to just, you know, structuring your programs for general fat loss clients, are there, you know, major staples that are in all those programs, or is there a general way that you kind of approach getting those guys started out?
The movie stars or just anybody in general?
Just anybody in general.
Yeah, I mean, you know, basically, oh, you know, always getting that, you know, how much time can they commit to you in the week, right? I mean, you can design the perfect training program, but if they're only going to give you 2 hours a week and you have, like, you know, 3 days of strength training designed out and 3 days of cardio, it's not going to work, right? So you got to figure out what kind of time commitment they're going to invest in the process. And then from there, based on what their goals are and what they're willing to commit, you design the training program. I mean, the programs, they have certain structure, right? They're going to have, like, you know, your dynamic warm-up or your movement prep, and you're going to have your little activation drills and things like that. And then from there, you know, typically on a fat loss program, I'm usually looking at total body workouts as opposed to, like, you know, splitting it up into upper one day, lower, or any other kind of split. I find that you get your most bang for your buck and return on your investment with, you know, 3 days of total body work compared to, you know, doing like body part splits. I mean, obviously if someone can invest more time and you can get into different splits or two a days or things like that, it's a whole different ballgame. But for fat loss, you know, I usually feel really comfortable if I can get somebody 3 days a week, total body, and we can get after it. Usually in the beginning, I'm probably looking at, you know, pairing up sets, you know, like an A1, A2 kind of thing, or non-competing muscle groups or moving patterns. You know, then, you know, as we move on and they develop some work capacity and they start getting in better shape, maybe I'm introducing things like mini circuits, like an A1 through A3 and a B1 through B3. And then as we move along even more, I might start getting into more like giant circuits where that maybe we're going A1 through A6 or A1 through A7. And just for people that might not understand, A1 means, like, you know, you have your first exercise might be squats. That's A1. A2 might be dumbbell bench press. And when I pair them up, it's just to sort of, it notes the sequence. If there says B, then you know it's a different exercise in the sequence. That makes sense?
Absolutely. And, you know, going back to talking a little bit about Mike Roussel, like, in terms of, like you said, farming out your nutrition, because it seems like a lot of people these days, like a lot of people in the industry, you know, you're getting multiple certifications and you might get some kind of a nutrition cert as well, or you're still giving out that information. How valuable is it to be able to just, you know, farm that out to a guy like Mike, who, that, you know, that's his bread and butter. That's what he does. Have you found that you just get better results having, you know, people get that specific of, you know, an assistance with the nutrition stuff?
Yeah. You know, I have a system here. I mean, you know, God, you know, this took a long time to develop, but, like, I have someone that runs the IMET tests. I have somebody that does the body comp analysis. Like, so I'm getting people to do a lot of the stuff so that I'm not having to charge people my rates for me to do that. Does that make sense? Like, in other words, for me to sit there and do an FMS or you know, 20 minutes and then having to charge them my hourly rate, mm-hmm. You know, I don't feel good doing that. So, you know, we do that. We have somebody that will conduct the IMET tests, like a technician here. One or two guys that do all the IMETs. One or two guys that do all the in-body analysis. So, you know, in terms of the program design, I'm designing all the programs based on, you know, the introduction with, you know, the initial meeting with the client, and then some of this data that I get from my trainers, and then also from just our initial kind of session, and then I'll make changes on the fly if I think they're necessary. But getting back to your question, I find it really valuable to have, like, a Dr. Mike to do the nutrition. Then I have a couple of soft tissue experts that do soft tissue work. you know, I prefer my area of expertise is in strength, is in developing and implementing strength and conditioning programs. It's not in, you know, developing and implementing nutritional programs or doing soft tissue work. I'd rather, you know, have people that are top in their field doing that stuff so that the client is getting the best of everything.
Very cool. Now let's, again, we'll talk a little bit more about training here. And one of those things that is debated about a lot is, you know, training men and women differently. And, you know, the whole concept of, you know, women just need to train like the men do, and then they're going to develop that body that they want. How do you see that debate, or how would you kind of address that when you get like a female client? Do you train them differently than men?
No, from a training perspective, I really don't treat women very differently from men. Mm-hmm. I think that's more of a marketing thing.
Totally, yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, there are a lot of people out there that like to talk the sort of marketing language to women, the long, lean muscles, this, that. I just don't do that, you know. I mean, maybe I'll throw in a few more glute and hip dominant exercises with women in their programs, but for the most part, you know, they're pushing prowlers, they're dragging sleds, you know, they're swinging kettlebells, they're deadlifting, they're squatting, they're trying to get through chin-ups. You know, it's a lot of the same. I mean, maybe you know, they're not doing as much volume of heavy lifting as I would with guys, but they're still gonna, you know, do some heavier lifting. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to still maybe at some point getting them and touching them in that 6 to 8 RM range. It may not be the bulk of their training, but, you know, I'm going to have them do it a little bit. And usually with people, if you make them understand that, you know, if you kind of monitor the volume and don't give them too much volume of heavy lifting, they're not going to get bigger. You know, they'll get stronger, but they're not going to get bigger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with women, the biggest thing is really, I think, the biggest difference between the two is really, you know, alleviating their fears and misconceptions, right? It's more, I think, a psychological thing than it is an actual physical thing. So, especially in New York, you get a lot of women because, you know, it's a fashion place and they're so in tune with, like, you know, the fashion magazines and the models that are in them, that they're really fearful of, you know, of touching weights. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you take the right approach, you talk to them, you explain things, it usually can get them past that. And then if there's still a little fear, you baby step them into it. You know, you just adjust things a little bit. Take kind of, you know, lead them slowly there.
So do you implement any kind of like accountability system with your clients to keep them on track, or, you know, do you have any, you know, tips for the listeners out there and helping them, you know, stay consistent with staying on track with their nutrition and their training and things like that?
Yeah. I mean, for those that maybe, you know, that aren't working with the trainer or whatever, I mean, I think the biggest thing you can do is really kind of schedule your workouts in your calendar, as if it's an actual business meeting. Usually when my clients do that, you know, they there's less likelihood that they're going to skip it because it's like in the calendar as if it's an appointment. As far as, you know, accountability, in terms of, I like my clients, and we keep training logs. You know, we've designed the programs out. We keep a training log of every rep and every set that they do and the weights they use. I find that works great for accountability, as well as, you know, gives people feedback as to how they're progressing. You know, since Dr. Mike does the nutrition stuff, he's pretty much, you know, handling the food side of it. But, you know, for most people, keeping a food journal is a really good idea. You know, and also writing down, you know, things like, you know, when they were eating, what was their mood like? Because a lot of people are emotional eaters, right? So if you kind of keep an eye on that too, you can start to see patterns, right? Like maybe like certain times they're reaching for, you know, more junk food because maybe they're slightly depressed or something like that. And, you know, keeping notes of that can be very powerful. And maybe they can sort of preemptively, you know, take care of that before that they hit that situation. As far as like an official accountability system at Peak, we don't really have one. You know, other than staying in contact with my clients via email or text, you know, if they start to slip up a little bit. But other than that, like if I, like a lot of my clients travel. So what I do is, you know, I'll design a training program, or we'll find out wherever they're going, if they're going to be somewhere traveling, a hotel, or if they're going to be on location, what kind of, you know, training environment they'll have access to. If it's something that, you know, they can easily follow like our training program on, that's great. If it's not, then I'll basically redesign a program that sort of fits whatever they have access to, and they'll use that program for when they're on the road. I've got some clients that, you know, I work with that they come to New York, they work with me while they're in town, they'll take their program back, and then they'll just use that program with their hometown trainer. So in that case, they're sending me emails, you know, with their logs, and I'm taking a look at it so that when I can change the program, I've got information looking at where they started, where they're at. So, you know, I do a bunch of different things, but as far as like a real like sort of, I don't know, accountability system, I don't have one in place. I am currently working on something that's going to be pretty interesting that will have some level of that involved in it. So maybe down the road I'll come back on here and let you know about that. But no, it's for sure. Something I'm working on.
For sure, that'd be great. You know, another thing that I wanted to ask you a little bit about is, you know, programming for conditioning, because again, that's one of those things that can be a little bit difficult when, you know, again, like you said, you know, I don't know if I'm seeing somebody once or twice or three times a week, and then making sure that they're able to recover before their next session. So how do you like to program conditioning for your clients? And do you have any like favorite tools that you like to use?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, with conditioning, it's going to go back to, you know, a couple things. What's the client's current capabilities, right? I mean, yeah, we all know that high intensity interval training is great, but can the client actually even do that? Are they even ready for it? You know, it's something like you see like on the internet and media. So everybody's like, oh, high intensity intervals. That's the only way to go. I mean, a lot of people are not even ready to do high intensity interval training, and maybe better served doing some strength training and then maybe doing some aerobic work just to start to build up a baseline of conditioning before they start getting after these high intensity intervals. So, you know, that's just something on a side note. But anyway, you know, what's their current capabilities? What's their goals? You know, if it's fat loss, I mean, are they an athlete? You know, do I have to work on, you know, work to get them towards training a certain energy system for their sport? Again, what kind of time commitment do they have? So basically, you know, if they're willing to commit time outside of our training sessions, then, you know, obviously that's going to help me structure the training session that we're doing together a bit differently. I can focus probably more than on strength and power work and things like that, and muscle endurance work. And then I can give them a program that they can implement, you know, on their own. Either via the IMET system, if it's somebody that I'm dealing with, you know, directly here at Peak, we'll test them on that, and I can build their program out from based on that. Or, you know, that if it's someone I can't test them, whether it's because it's the via distance client or something, you know, I'll build the program out based on an age predicted formula and build out their work. The recovery intervals and intensities and stuff like that. But again, like I always err on the side of being conservative. I'll start them out at least a week or two, if not three, you know, kind of work on a more of a steady state kind of situation, or even just aerobic intervals at first, before I start progressing them to like more higher intensity anaerobic intervals. And if the client isn't going to give me that time outside the gym, then I'm going to build the conditioning into the training session. And that's usually going to come after the strength training. So it may be, you know, we may end up utilizing the prowler and doing some prowler pushes. A few of my favorite tools are probably the prowler. Like I like the Woodway Force treadmill. you know, we have something called a Kaiser Total Body Bike, which is kind of like a fan bike with no fan, but it's basically the same kind of capabilities. Jacob's Ladder, VersaClimber, Concept 2 Rower. I kind of like for conditioning, especially for, you know, beginners and intermediates, utilizing sort of low learning curve apparatuses, but things that'll give me high return on that investment of time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like doing metabolic circuits, things like that, you know, strongman circuits, I love, they're great. But you know, sometimes I like to build up a little bit of a conditioning base for them by utilizing like a fan bike or a prowler, you know, or like a VersaClimber at first, you know, at the end of their strength training. And then maybe we can progress to things like doing circuits with prowler pushes and sled drags and farmer's walks and things like that.
The fun stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that stuff, I mean, you can use that stuff at first as, you know, early on as well. Mm-hmm. I like to try to maybe in the beginning, at least get people strong in just sort of fundamental movement patterns. Mm-hmm. Even if it is a fat loss program, I'm still looking to do that.
I mean, it sounds like you guys got some awesome equipment there. Do you have any stuff that they've kind of just, you know, brought in the last couple months or so that you've really been like, wow, like, you know, we can really get a lot of bang for our buck out of using this stuff?
Yes. We actually just installed a brand new heart rate monitoring system.
So, oh, yeah. I saw a picture of that on Twitter. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So what we have now is we have a system where our clients, they have their own transmitter. And they basically create an account, and from the account they have all their information, they have their height, their weight, age, and all that stuff. And the software predicts an age predicted max heart rate. You can actually go above that age predicted, and if you do, it recalibrates the setting to your new max heart rate. So in essence, it may slightly underestimate max heart rate, but if you work hard enough and you do go higher than that max, it will recalibrate to that new max, and then the percentages will be based off of that. So what this allows us to do is we have everybody, you know, if people, everybody, whoever's on the system, they're up on it. We can see their heart rate. We can see their training zones. We have a big 80-inch flat screen TV. Even the client can see that. So now we can base their recovery, instead of on time, we can base it on their actual heart rate. So it's really changing the dynamics of the training. We've got, you know, the clients are now really in tune to their heart rate, to, you know, how they thought they were working hard. They weren't working as hard. They're kind of getting a better feel now for what a certain heart rate feels like in terms of rate of perceived exertion. The system can actually be utilized outside of our facility. So if they wanted to go take a spin class or go to yoga class and wear it, they can wear it. It'll record the data. They won't be able to see the data actually during the actual session like they do here. But when they come back to peak, it'll upload the data, and then it'll go into their account, and we can see that data as well as they can see that data. So it's really very cool.
That sounds awesome. Have you guys been, I mean, just in terms of them being able to kind of like actually see what is hard work in terms of heart rate, because I know I have some clients that like their heart rate just gets jacked up like nothing, and then it takes forever for that heart rate to come back down. So does that help you, or have you been using that as kind of like a tool of like setting up rest times and things like that?
Yeah, totally. So what's good is that, you know, the way it's system set up, it's, you know, it goes 50 to 60, 60 to 70, 70, 80, 80 to 90, 90 to 100%, right, of max heart rate. So, you know, you can push people and you can see where they're at. But the big thing what I like too is I can kind of look at their recovery, and I can see, okay, depending on what I'm trying to accomplish, right? If I'm trying to build up sort of like, you know, doing more of a metabolic session, I might not let them recover down as far, right? I might let them only come down into that 60 to 70% zone. because I'm really just trying to keep the pace moving. But if I'm doing more of a sort of a strength-based emphasis or a power-based emphasis workout, then I'm going to allow them to come down and recover down into that 50, 55, even up to 60%. Does that make sense?
And that just sounds like it's so great how we have like all this stuff. Like you can get apps for your iPhone now and like adapters so you can like do so much cool stuff with technology when you're in the gym. It's just so cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I just think, you mean the feedback we've gotten from the trainers and the clients, it's like, it's, you know, after their session, they get an email that, you know, basically spells out what they did, how many calories they burned, how much time they spent in each zone, what their average, effort was. So it's really cool. It makes the training session and it becomes kind of a bit of a game for them. You know, I've had clients tell me, you know, say, hey, how'd you feel after the last workout, whatever. I said, you know, I thought you did pretty good. And they would be like, oh, you know, I didn't do as well. I didn't burn as many calories, or my average heart rate wasn't as high. And it's just funny that, you know, all of a sudden they're kind of getting clued into this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it makes it really, really powerful.
So the other thing that I wanted to ask you a little bit about, getting more back into like the fitness industry side of things, you know, one of the things that we always get questions about is like advice for fitness professionals out there for maximizing their potential and possible success. Because, you know, it is like, it's a weird saying, but if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. And you guys are like right in the thick of it, and you guys have been thriving.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, you know. I mean, first of all, for me personally, like, you know, I just, you have to develop your own personal vision and passion, right? You know, I've always felt, and I've always been very biased towards one-on-one training. Even in the face of the entire industry changing to small group and semi-private training, I've pretty much steered the course and stayed one-on-one. I think if you believe in your vision and you're passionate about it, you know, you can be successful in whatever path you decide to take. What I did personally was I just worked hard. You know, I reinvested in myself and in my business, and then I just took strategic risks. A big part of why I got to where I am today was continuing education. I really feel that, you know, that is really important for personal trainers, and for them to become very successful. Knowledge is power, right? So, you know, you want to get out there and learn as from as many people as you can. Don't marry yourself to one educator's opinion. You know, you see a lot of guys, they pigeonhole themselves into basically becoming mini-me's of one particular person. And, you know, it's great, you know, if that person may have a lot of information, that's great, and they could be and a lot of valuable information. But, you know, one person doesn't know it all. One person doesn't maybe have all the experience with every type of client. And it's good to get out there and learn from a lot of people and just get different people's perspectives and then develop your own way or your own system of doing things. So, you go out there and learn and take what you find is valuable and bring it back to your practice and apply it and see if it works for you. And if it does, you know, keep it. If it doesn't, you know, play around with it, maybe change a few things and keep trying it. And if it doesn't work at all, get rid of it.
One thing that I got to throw at you, and it's something that I've been asking a lot of the guests, is I'm always looking for new stuff to read. So is there anything that you've been reading lately that, you know, that has really kind of piqued your interest? I'll give you anything, if fitness stuff or like even like self-development, like anything that, you know, showed up from Amazon.
Well, God, I mean, I've been really reading a lot about heart rate variability. Mm-hmm. That's been a lot of interest of mine, just because, you know, I find that recovery is one of the most overlooked variables in training. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dr. Mike and I spent a lot of time talking about recovery, from a nutritional standpoint and also from a, you know, a training standpoint. And we've been using HRV technology with a lot of our clients, especially our athletes. And that's also helping dictate the training process. So I find that, you know, it gives you, you know, sort of an objective feedback of how the person is dealing with the with stress. And, you know, from there you can kind of get an idea whether they're, you know, whether they're capable of handling the stress of the workout that you have planned. And if not, then, you know, I call a slight audible basically, and we'll modify the workout slightly. I mean, I always have a training program and a training plan, but it doesn't mean that if on a certain day that the client or the athlete walks in and, you know, they're not really in the correct shape or in the right mindset for that particular day, that we're still going to go full steam ahead on that plan. You know, you can make changes and sort of, you know, call an audible for the day. It's not a big deal. It's not going to ruin the overall training program. You know what I mean? And I think one of the mistakes that, you know, we were talking about when it comes to continuing education, that I find that sort of, you know, some trainers fall into is in the very beginning when they first get into the industry, they get really excited. They go to lots of seminars. They attend lots of courses. They, you know, they're doing a ton of continuing education. And then basically what happens is, you know, they start getting busier as a trainer, training more clients. You know, maybe they all of a sudden they start getting into writing blogs and articles and things like that. And all of a sudden, like, their development of as a trainer starts to get stifled. They stop going to seminars. They stop going to workshops. They start resting on the laurels of the information that they accrued in the first few years. And what happens is, in essence, you know, they look down the road, and 10 or 12 years later, yeah, they've got 10 or 12 years under their belt, but they really only have about 3 or 4 years of information. Mm-hmm. And they haven't really evolved as a trainer. And I think that's a deadly trap. You know, if you're not evolving in this industry and getting better all the time, you start to become irrelevant, or how you're training, you're teaching your clients, and what you're training them becomes irrelevant, because it's no longer on the cutting edge.
I think that is pretty much the perfect place to end. But before we do go, I want to ask, you know, for people that want to check out some more of your stuff, where are the best places to go? And do you have anything coming up, like in terms of speaking engagements, things like that you want to let the audience know about?
Yeah, I'm going to be speaking at Perform Better in California. I believe it's Long Beach.
Oh, great.
So I think I'm going to actually be talking about one of my more favorite topics is, you know, designing energy system training programs. Mm-hmm. And then I'm doing two other speaking engagements through a company called Event Glide. These ones are going to be more on performance enhancement. So myself, Dr. Mike, Will Fleming, and Coach Dose, we're all going to be presenting at that. I think one's in Jacksonville, Ohio. Another one is in Jacksonville, Florida, and the other one's in Columbus, Ohio. I'm not sure. I may be doing something else again for the NSCA. Wait to find out about that. And we're going to start doing more seminars here at Peak. We'll be publishing that on Peak's Facebook page and stuff like that. Best place to find me would be Twitter, Joe Dowdell, NYC, or my Facebook fitness page, which is Joe Dowdell fitness page on Facebook.
Very cool. Everyone, make sure you check out Joe's pages, and you know, definitely a very busy year, it sounds like, on your end. But Joe, before we go, just want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on, and I'd love to talk to you down the road, and hopefully I'll see you out in Long Beach. I think I'm going to be heading out for that as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, because I've only been to the one the Perform Better's up in Rhode Island, so I'm pretty excited about going out to California.
Way better than Providence.
Okay, hopefully. All right, I'm looking forward to it. Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. You know, if you get any questions from people, you know, after they've listened in and stuff, and you want to, you know, kind of have them reach out to me, they can do it, you know, via Twitter or whatever, or if they want to send me an email, teampeak@peakperformancenyc.com. I'll try. I mean, I try to answer as many emails as I can, and sometimes it's hard to answer everybody, but I do try to make a pretty good effort to respond to people.
Awesome. That's perfect. You know, again, thanks everyone for listening and tuning in this week. Don't forget to check out thethickass.com for all your updates on current episodes and future guests. And again, everyone, thanks. And Joe, thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Cheers.